All right, so we are on the air. All right, a few shilas sent in. One of them is like this. Here we go. Oh yeah, so one shy, hello, Martin. One shy sent like this. We'll give him a name. Reuven gave Shimon his shaver to put into his room. On the way over, Shimon decides to have a little fun with it and threatens Levi to start shaving off his beard. Levi's not one to mess with. Levi knocks it out of his hand and it breaks. Who pays? So we have Reuven shaver, give it over to Shimon to put into Shimon's room. And Levi, after being threatened with the zzzz right by his face, knocks it out of his hand and breaks it. So we'll start with Levi. Again, we don't pass in Choshe Mishpat Shailas here, but just to bring out an interesting case and different ideas, Levi is allowed to do self-defense. He doesn't have to let himself get shaved. So he for sure is able and allowed to knock it out if he was under real threat. So if he did it because he felt he was under real threat and there's no other way for him to stop, meaning if he could just like walk away or if he could just like hold his hand, then he has to do that. He has no right to break something. But if there was no other way for him to protect himself, so then he would be allowed to knock it out. Hello, Josh. So then he would be allowed to knock out the shaver. Josh, we're talking about someone who broke someone's shaver in self-defense. So then he would be putter. But if he could have broken the shaver in some other way, defend himself in some other way, then he would not be allowed just to break the shaver because you're annoying me. Now, that's as far as Levi is concerned. As far as Shimon goes, the Shimon had to pay back Reuven. It was Reuven's shaver and Shimon did this trick. So Shimon didn't break it himself. Shimon is what we call like a grumma. He caused it to get broken because of his silly deed. So probably in the letter of the law, he would be putter because he didn't break it because he caused it. But in Shemayah, he'd be obligated to pay. And there's this concept, I spoke actually with Israel about. There's a concept of grumma ben nizak and putter, that you're putter b'din adam, but you're chayv in Shemayah. So that may be relevant in this case. Okay, case number two, someone asks, do you have to wear your yarmulke 24/7? Do you have to wear it when you're sleeping? Do you have to wear it when you are exercising, when you're playing basketball? How does it work exactly? So in Shulchan Aruch, it's brought down to two places. Number one, you're not allowed to make brachas and daven without it. That's one case. The other place brought down in halacha is you're not allowed to walk dalet amos without a yarmulke. Now, the idea behind it is either to always have your shemayim, or the Taz holds as an Isser D'Oraisa. You have to have it on because you must be separate from the Goyim. You must be separate from the Goyim, and therefore you must always keep on your yarmulke. So now, according to that, they bring down, so you must wear it at all times. Hello, Jay. We're discussing wearing yarmulkes. Josh, a great question. So like this. So therefore, whenever you are walking for amas, you for sure need to have it on. Josh asked a great question. When you're on the treadmill and you're running in place, is that for amas? You haven't really moved, right? You're the same marker that you were an hour ago. But in both cases, the idea like this, there is a heter, right? People who go to work, sometimes they don't wear the yarmulkes. So nowadays it's a lot easier to wear yarmulkes, but whenever there's a certain hefset involved, okay, so then we're leaning with it. But whenever you're able to, then you should, because you kind of are playing with fire over here. You have the opportunity and an obligation to do a mitzvah d'oraisa to be separate from the guy. And therefore, definitely try to keep your yarmulke on. Now, when you shower, you can take it off. And when you're at the beach in the ocean and it's separate swimming, then you can take it off. But other than that, you definitely should try to get those big na-na-nachman yarmulkes and put it on while you play ball or while you exercise or while you sleep. For sure, there's some spooky things when you sleep to have it on, some spooky stuff, which I can't go into because I don't know. But definitely, it's a great idea never to be without it, because you either have your shemayim or because it may be an isidereisa. But again, there are certain heterim, but if you don't have to, don't. And therefore, do everything you can to keep it on.
Rabbi, I thought the Gemara references Rebbeim who did not wear a yarmulke, and like they put it on to say a bracha, and so they weren't holding these two things of Yir Shemayim.
Good question. From what I understand is, it's brought down in halacha to have some people have two coverings. The Hasidim, for example, won't make a bracha without two coverings. I sat next to Chassid and Shir, whenever you take a drink, he'd go like this. He had a yarmulke on, but he would want to have his shirt on top of his head also. So like, I don't know exactly what's going on in the Amoraim's times, but most likely they was referring to the second covering, not the first covering. Okay, we have to, let's look into it. Okay, anyway, this is Halacha Shulchan Aruch. May I make this up? Fine. Now, the third shayla was sent in by Yoni, and Yoni is not here, but wanted to know, are you allowed to sleep or go in and out of your car on Shabbos? For example, he's going camping, and in case the weather gets a little bit wild or you need supplies, can you go in and out of your car? And the answer is that as long as you will separate the lights, we'll take out the battery, whatever it is, so you can use the car like a room of your house, that's fine. So you just would want to make sure the door, when you open the door and close the door, you're not setting off any lights. And then you can go in and out of your car. We actually had a guest who we didn't want to let in the house, but we definitely wanted to feed him. So he slept in his car and he came in and he spent showers with us many times in his car. And it's no problem. He disconnected any electricity and it's no problem. All right, so let's get to work over here. Those are some random shaylas. Here we go. So I'm going to do Boireh this week. We're going to split into two parts. It's a lot. So we'll do Boireh part one this week. Yes, Margie. We want to do Boireh part one of Boireh this week. And then next week, actually, I think I want to do Shavuos, a lot of different shaylas with Shavuos. And then in 2 weeks, we'll finish up Boireh, hopefully. All right, so here we go. Boireh, which means sorting, in the Mishkan, after they would thresh, after they would jump and break all the grains, there would be a mixture of the shaft, of the good stuff, and the bad stuff left over from the grains. And then they would have to sort it. It was a lot of work, and that's what they would do in the Mishkan. That was sorting, that was Boireh in the Mishkan. The idea is you are undoing a mixture. You're separating from a mixture. So that is the idea behind Boireh. That's where it was in the Mishkan, and that is Aser. Now, Boireh is relevant not just by foods, but even by non-foods. Anytime you have a mixture, edible or not edible, and you have a mixture of good and you're bad, you're not allowed to separate that mixture. So we say by foods, we understand you have it many different cases. In non-foods, you could have it in games. Let's say you have chess pieces. If someone here knows how to play chess, so you have a lot of chess pieces, you can't just start separating the knights and the bishops. There's certain ways to do it and not to do it, which we'll discuss. But it's relevant in both cases. Silverware also. You have a mixture of silverware. You can't just start separating the forks and the knives. A lot of rules behind it. Okay, so that is the background behind the Boireh. Now, in order for there to be a Boireh situation, you need to have two things. It has to be a mixture, and it has to be a mixture of two things or more. But if it's not a mixture, or it's not two things, it's one thing, well, then there's no Isser Boireh because there's no mixture here. So you would have to have two issues for there to, two requirements for there to be an issue of Boireh. And then we need to go explain now what constitutes a mixture and what constitutes two things. What is it considered two things? Hello, Ben Zion. Okay, Ben Zion, we're starting right now, Boireh part one. Okay, so in order for there to be a Boireh, Shaila has to be a mixture. What's called a mixture? If you have separate entities, let's say on your plate, you have a plate in front of you, and in one corner you have vegetables, and another corner you have some chicken. That's not a mixture. They're completely separate, completely accessible by themselves. Hello, Ben Zion again. So Ben Zion was starting part one of Boireh. If you have a plate, two separate entities, they're not mixed in your refrigerator. You have salad dressing and you have soda and you have water. They're not mixed. Each one of them are accessible by themselves. Each one of them stand by themselves and are, you could get. So there's no mixture here. When is there a mixture? When they're less identified by themselves, when they're mixed up. For example, a salad bowl where you have cucumbers and tomatoes and peppers and lettuce, they're all mixed up. Even though you see them all, but they're not identified by themselves. They are a salad. They are a mixture. You will open your refrigerator, you're seeing salad dressing and soda. There's no mixture there. There's two separate entities. On your plate, you have your chicken and your kugel. That's not mixed. That's two separate entities. So now, there will be a lot of cases that are like on the border, fine line. Like, what's the difference? Is it or is it not? And it's very hard to clearly answer every case. So when it's a suffix, you have to err on the side that, you know what, maybe it is a mixture. But not everything is a mixture. And therefore, if it's not a mixture, you can do whatever you want. Once it is a mixture, then we have issues. Another example, let's say you have a big, big piece of chicken in your chicken soup. Even though they're touching each other, that's not a mixture because it's so separate, so defined, therefore it's not a mixture. However, if you have a piece of hair or you have a fly in your soup, in your bowl, in your cup, that's smaller. That there's a lesson that's used, infused, whatever that word means. But there it is considered a mixture because it's not such a huge, large, separate entity. And therefore, that would be a borer issue. You don't have to eat the fly or eat the hair. We'll get to what to do in a minute. But then you have what we'll call a mixture, a taruvus, which you have to deal with. Now that's part one. Part two is it has to be two minim, two separate things. So therefore, if you have a large piece of chocolate cake and a small piece of chocolate cake, that's not two separate things. So if you have a plate mixed up and you want to separate the big chocolate pieces and the small chocolate pieces, that's no problem because that's not a mixture. That's one thing all over the place. In order for it to be considered two things, either it has to be two flavors or two uses, two names. For example, chocolate cake and coffee cake. If you have pieces mixed up of chocolate cake and coffee cake, that's called two things because two different flavors. Cucumbers, tomatoes, two things, two names, two flavors. Forks and knives, two things, different names. What about spoons? So if you have 10 teaspoons mixed up, that's not a mixture because that's all one thing. But if you have 5 teaspoons and 5 tablespoons, two separate names, two separate functions, that would be considered a mixture. Hello, doctor. So we're now discussing borer. In order for it to be borer, we've discussed now, you need to have a mixture, not separate entities, and you need to have two things. What's considered two things is if you have two names, two functions, two flavors, or if it's attached. For example, meat and fat, even though it's clearly defined, maybe, but it's attached, that's considered a mixture. Also, a peel of an orange, that's considered a mixture. A peel of an orange would be considered a mixture because they are attached to each other. So these are examples. In every scenario, you're going to find, before you have to figure out how to do it, first you need to figure out, is there an issue? Is this borer? And that's what you need to ask yourself first. Is it a mixture? And are there two things? Okay.
Rabbi,
yeah.
Rabbi, if you have multiple ingredients to make a salad, can you not combine them as a mixture to make a salad?
Oh, to make a mixture is no problem.
Oh, it is.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, I did not point that out. To make a mixture, mutter, no problem. Boer, because we discussed in the Mishkan, everything comes from the Mishkan. In Mishkan, the Isser wasn't making the mixture. When I forget the Isser. Well, they didn't make the mixture. What they did was undo the mixture. That's where the Isser Boer comes from. And Amber J is right. If you have cucumbers, tomatoes, and peppers, you want to go throw them all together in a bowl, make a mixture, mutter. But once you've done that, you cannot go ahead and undo that mixture. Okay, so that's part one. Part one is to understand what is borer, and when you have a scenario of borer, two things that are considered mixed. Now that you have a situation of borer, how do you deal with it? So here there's three things that you need all three of them in order to make it mutter, in order to deal with this mixture. Okay, the three things are, the Hebrew terms are miad, which means immediately, biad, which means with your hand, and oichel mitoich pseilas, the good from the bad. We're gonna describe and explain all three. But now in order for you to deal with a borer situation, you need to have all three of those things to make it mutter. Okay, so first, biad, we'll go with your hand. You have, let's say, a salad. You want the cucumbers. So you cannot go ahead and start sifting and sorting, but with your hand, you can go ahead and take it out. You have a chicken and gravy. You can go ahead and stick your hand in and pull out the chicken. Or you can use a fork, because a fork here is not considered a sifting kli. The fork is like an extension of your hand. That would be considered your hand. But what you cannot do is take one of those spoons with holes in it, or even the fork, and scoop from underneath, thereby sifting out in between the teeth of the fork or the holes of that spoon, that would be considered with a kli, not with your hand. So if you want to not be rude and you don't want to use your hand, that's fine, but you have to use a kli, which is just like an extension of your hand and not enabling a sifting process. Okay, so you have these mixtures. Step one is use your hand or an equivalent to your hand, like a fork or a spoon, but it's not being used in a sifting fashion. Okay, that's part one of the heter. Now, part two of the heter is miyad, which means you have to be doing it for immediate use, not for later in the day, even on Shabbos. It has to be for immediate use. For example, let's just say you want to set the table and you have the mixture, the forks and spoons and the knives. So to start pulling out a fork is a problem of boer. But if you're doing it with your hand, which you are, and you're doing it for immediate use because you want to set the table now for the meal, that's fine. But if the meal is in 6 hours and you just want to set the table now because you're like that type, you just want to get it done, that would not be considered miyad. That's not for immediate use. You would not be allowed to do that. So now if the forks are not mixed up, they're separate, no problem. Set the table 10 hours in advance, I don't care. But because they are mixed up, because there's a mixture here, and you are undoing this mixture, you cannot do it too far in advance. It has to be miyad. What if looking at the table gives you a sense of, beautiful, it's beautiful, my table is beautiful, my Shabbos house is beautiful, then it'll be okay because you're not doing it for the meal. You're doing it to clean up your house. You're doing it to make your house look nice for Shabbos. That may be considered miyad, immediate, because I'm getting immediate benefit from it. But if it's just in my head because I want to be done, that's not enough. So here, 8 o'clock in the morning, you're going to shul. The suda's at 12. To set the table for the suda at 8 in the morning, if the silverware is not mixed, go for it. But if the silverware is mixed and you're leaving the house, you cannot set the table now. If you're staying home and you want to look at the beautiful table and you're being honest with yourself, you're not doing it just to save time later. You're doing it because you want to see a beautiful table, then it's fine. Another example of this is, let's say you have a bowl of berries and some of the berries are good and some of the berries are not good and you're serving it for dessert. So the meal's at 12 o'clock, dessert's at 1:30. At what point can you pull out the good berries to put them in the serving dish to make it look nice and to have it, right? It's a mixture. You have good and bad berries. Those are two different names. There's good berries and there's bad berries. That's how logically a mixture. At what point can I pull out, you're not allowed to pull out the bad berries, we'll see in a second. So, but at what point can I pull out the good berries to set up my dessert? It's not gonna be for an hour and a half. So there the rule is, you're allowed to do it before the meal. That's considered miyad. Immediate is before the meal you're gonna serve it. So even though you're not gonna serve it for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you're allowed to do it immediately before the meal. Therefore, the meal's at 12. You cannot pull out the good berries at 8 in the morning. You can't do that. That's not miyad. But you can do it at 11:45. You can do it whenever the immediate time frame is that you're preparing for that meal. You can do it in that prep time, 11:40, 11:50. That's fine. Even though you're not going to serve it until 1 o'clock because it's part of the meal, and this is immediately before the meal. Okay? So that's part two, heter requirement number two, that with your hand and immediate. And the biggest one, and maybe the hardest one, is what about you have to take the good from the bad. Take the good from the bad. A question sent in, which we'll discuss next week or in 2 weeks actually, is when you're washing the silverware, can you sort them? It's a good question, meaning I'm holding now my fork. Do I have to put my fork into a mixture or can I put my fork into the fork drawer? The answer is, once you're holding it in your hand, it's not mixed. And therefore, there's no mixture here, so you put it wherever you like. However, what is great when you're washing the dishes. Okay, let's say you have a pile of forks, knives, and spoons, and you're washing them. So when you wash it, you're pulling up the fork. You just separate the fork from the mixture. We're allowed to do that. So that's what we're going to discuss right now, which is, when you're doing it immediate with your hand, you must be taking the good from the bad. What constitutes good and what constitutes bad? So it's not based on the world or even you. It's based on the moment. At this moment, what's your goal? What do you want? What's good for you? So let's take the berries example. If your goal by the berries is you want to make a platter of good looking berries. So the good looking berries is what we call the ochel, the food. The bad looking berries is what we call the pseiles, the non-food. And therefore the heter will only be to pull out the good berries, not to separate the bad berries. But let's say the same bowl of berries. Instead of you making a platter of good berries, what you want to do is you want to eat the bad berries. They're not terrible. They're not rotten. So I don't want to serve them. They don't look so appetizing. So I'm going to eat them. At that moment, what am I trying to do now? Eat bad berries. That's my goal. They become the eichel. They become the good. And therefore, I can reach into this bowl, pull out the bad berry, and eat it. Even though it's a mixture, I'm doing it with my hand for immediate use right now. I want to eat it. And that, to me, is the eichel. That, to me, is the good. And therefore, let's say you have a mixture of silverware. You want to wash them. At that moment, they're all exactly the same. They're all dirty silverware. At that point, it's not even a mixture because it's all one thing, right? You know what we said? In order to be a mixture, you need to have two names. What's the name of a dirty fork, spoon, and knife? It's not a dirty fork, a dirty spoon, and dirty knife. It's dirty dishes. It doesn't matter what order you wash them in. So everything you pull out, either is not even a mixture, or whatever you pull out is what you want to wash at that moment, that's considered the good. And therefore, when you have this mixture of silverware, if it's clean, you can't sort. There's different names, it's a mixture. If it's dirty, it's all one thing, and whatever you pull out, you want to use anyway right now. And therefore, pull out that fork, wash it, and then you can put it wherever you want to put it. You can put it in the fork dish, whatever, because it's already not a mixture. Okay, so that is an example. The last example, and that we'll do right now, is fruit. You want to peel fruit. How do you peel a fruit? An orange, an apple, how do you peel it? It's a mixture, they're attached. And you can't get to the ochel. You don't want to eat the peel, you want to discard the peel, you want to get rid of it. How do you peel it? Every time you pull off, you're pulling the bad from the good. That could be an Issa Deraisa. So here's a new heter. It's called, there's a barrier, there's a blockade. Whenever the psoles, the bad, is acting like a blockade, you're allowed to break through. So in this case, the orange peel is blocking the orange. So you're allowed to what's called siluk, to remove. You're not sorting, you're removing the blockade. So go ahead and peel that orange, even though you pull away the bad from the good. You can peel it because really what you're doing is removing the blockade. Another example is this, let's say you go to someone's house and there are 10 guests and they pile all their coats up. And you were the funny guy that came first, your coat's on the bottom. How are you gonna get your coat out? How are you gonna get it? To go ahead and pull out from the bottom, first of all, you probably won't be able to, it's very heavy. Second of all, you may not even see your coat. Third of all, you're gonna make all the coats fall on the floor. You won't be invited again. So what do you do in such a case? This is another example of barrier, of siluk. I'm allowed to remove. What I'm gonna do is pick up the top five coats, remove them. The next five coats, remove them. And thereby exposing my coat. That's mutter. So again, so we'll hold it here in Boer. What we've done is a lot to digest. We'll do a lot of applications and there's some more heterium next time. But just to put in the frame, Boer is a mixture of two separate things of which you're not allowed to sort. The only way you are allowed to sort it is with your hand or the equivalent for immediate use, not for later in the day. And you have to be taking the good from the bad, not the bad from the good. Unless the bad completely envelops the good and blocks the good, so then you can break through the barrier, remove the barrier bad to access the good. So just a few practical examples just for this week. You're playing chess, the game is over. You have all these pieces mixed up. You're not allowed to sort them for the next game in an hour. But what you can do is, when you're about to play, pull out your pieces. Or both players that are playing at the same time, all the pieces are good, right? Someone asked me last year, let's say you're both about to play chess. So I'm setting up for you and I'm setting up for me. In that case, all the pieces, the white pieces and the black pieces, they're all good. They're all good pieces. So therefore, there's no mixture anymore. And therefore, I shouldn't say there's no mixture, but there's no such thing as bad or good. And therefore, I can go set up both sides of the board at the same time, pulling out my pieces, his pieces. At that moment, they're all considered good pieces. Okay, that's one example. I mentioned that in 2 weeks, actually, we will do a lot more heterim and some more examples of Boer. But for this Shabbos, keep this in mind. And remember, it's an Issa D'oraisa if you mess up. So try not to mess up. Okay, so next week we'll do Hilchos Shavuos, which means a lot of the halachas of Birchas HaTorah, waking up early, going to sleep, and milk and meat. We'll try all the shaylos that may come up on Shavuos. Hopefully we'll discuss next week. Okay, so normally at this point we would do tefillah or tehillim and bitachon. This week I wanted to take a week off and discuss what happened in Meron and certain things. Hard to give a shiur. Every shiur this week has always been sidetracked, and rightly so, with what happened in Meron. In America, you feel it less, or maybe not. In Israel, it's like it's all over the place. You can't walk. Like, I went to Levaya Matzah Shabbos. On my way to one Levaya, I passed by two others. It's like it's everywhere. It's not something you could ignore. It's not something you should ignore. And therefore, in this forum, I just want to discuss a little bit, a few different takeaways. Now, the general theme, which I'm not going to discuss, is what all the professionals and the rabbis, and it's all true. They've made 3 points. Point one is feel the pain, feel other people's pain, hold on to it, don't ignore it. That's for sure true. The right thing to do. It's Klai Yisrael's pain, it's your pain. Part two is we never know why. We're not in the VM. We can't know why. We're not even going to explain why. Oh, well, I know this happened because of this. We don't go there. That's not what we do. Hashem has his reasons. We don't need to know them. We're not going to know them. And the third thing is we have to improve ourselves. For sure, true. We should always be improving ourselves. For sure, at a time like this, you want to find something. Okay, those are three general themes. This is always true. True here, true every time. We'll put them on the side. I wanted to pull out a few different things that were talking to me, and I'll share them, which is in Yom Kippur davening, in Rosh Hashanah davening, we say in the Sana Toikef, we say that Kol Boy Oilam Yavum Fanacha. All the people in the world come in front of you, Kibinei Maroin, which literally means like sheep. But what spoke to me was Maron and Meron, they spell the same way, maybe with the Yud, maybe not with the Yud. But we all go in front of Hashem, we all went in front of Hashem, just like the B'nai Meron, just like the people of Meron, just like the 45 people that were killed on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. All the world went in front of Hashem. Hashem is there and made a decree for 45 of them. He decreed on Lag BaOmer to get killed in the way they did. And for everyone else, the decree was, you're not going to. Whether you're not going to be in Meron, you're going to be a different country, different city, you're going to be there, but you're going to escape. Whatever it was, all of us went under that same stick of Hashem for the decree. And it wasn't just like an accident that just happened on Meron out of nowhere, a fluke. No, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is when Hashem decided this Meron thing is going to happen, and it's going to happen to these 45 people and these injured and not to this person. So when we dive in every day, but for sure Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I'll be thinking about Kibbeinei Meron. Like we were saved. For whatever reason, we were saved, and they weren't for whatever reason. That was all Gezerah from Hashem Yom Kippur. Nothing is by happenstance. And we have to realize Hashem said, you're going to make it. And you have to know why. You have to live up to it. Hashem decided you're going to stay in this world, which means you still have work to do. And that's part one. Part two is it happened in Meron by the kever of Shimon Bar Yochai. But Shimon Bar Yochai brought the Zohar. They brought Torah HaNister, which is hidden Torah. Right, there are two types of Torahs, right? It's all one big Torah, but like two branches of it, the hidden Torah and the revealed Torah. And Shimon Bar Yochai brought for both of them, but famously also brought the hidden Torah. And I just believe that that's what's going on over here. This is hidden. The same way the Torah, the Zohar, the Kabbalah is hidden secrets of this world. What happened over there was just not normal. It was for sure hidden from us. Why it happened, how it happened, when it happened, this whole thing was one major hidden Torah. And again, we're not going to know why. We're never going to know why in this world. But just to understand, the same way there's parts of Torah we don't understand, this is a part of it. There's a lot of Torah we don't understand. Hashem's decrees, this is Nister. This was hidden from us. And it happened there in the Makom of the hidden Torah. Now, another point which I just want to highlight is at that moment, right? This was like after midnight in Meron. what was happening right there? You have a tremendous simcha. It was after the sfira and everyone's together and the music, and they lit the bonfire. The simcha was at such a peak. It was a peaking moment of simcha. Second of all, tremendous moment of achdus. Who was at that gathering? Every type and stripe of from Jews and maybe even not from Jews. They were all there. Chassidim, all different types of chassidim. Yeshivish, all different types of yeshivas. You had the more Zionistic, the more secular, the more Haredi. You had everyone. They were all there. As you see from the death toll and death names, everyone. They were all there. You had such a tremendous point of achdus. So you had the peak of simcha. You had like the peaking of achdus. Like besides the Kosel, which has the Koreans and the Christians too. Like when you have all Jews of every stripe and flavor together, dancing together, it was there. So you had achdus, you had simcha, and you also had very holiness, a lot of kedusha and tara, purity, holiness. Like they were all davening. No one was there like, you know, watching movies. They were all there davening in the Schuster of Shimon. So you have kedusha and tara peaking. After Chatzais, I heard, was like the holiest time. So you have kedusha and tara, you have achdus, you have simcha. And in 1 second, those three went to the exact opposite extreme. You had people stepping on each other. Now, it was completely accidental and non-avoidable. But that was what Hashem created, was that tremendous achdus and then people trampling on top of other people. Then you had simcha to mourning, direct, straight to mourning, to avelus. You had kedusha and tara. You now had tumah. There was mace. There was tumah everywhere. You have these three climaxing, tremendous highlights in Simcha, Achdus, and Tara. Within a second, it all switched. It all changed to the exact opposite extreme, on top of each other, mourning, and death and tumah. So, again, what's the takeaway? I guess in life we have so many opportunities where we could do good, we could do bad. You could do kedusha. Or you could do the opposite kedusha. You could be achdus and the opposite. You could be getting along with your friend and all of a sudden say a mean remark. You were achdusing him. You were with him. You were all together. And all of a sudden you do some mean mark. You could be watching a shir and all of a sudden push a different button and watch a movie. You could be climaxing on kedusha and tara. And the next second, like, boom, change your mind, change course, change channels. And that's like, it happened over there. Hashem is the one to change the channels. Wasn't man-driven, but we, through our lives throughout the year, we have our opportunities of changing channels for the good, meaning we could be in a massive situation of bad and negativity, and we can change it for the good. Or unfortunately, we're sometimes in a situation of good, 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 and we could change it for the bad. Like, so why do that? So when you're at that moment of change, of crossroads, of opportunity, of situation to change, have in mind, there was a major change and it was a very terrible one. When we are confronted with that, we should make it a good one. I'll end up with a story. I heard this from Rabbi Wallerstein, not connected to Meron, but just an idea. He said there was a young couple who just got married and they were eating breakfast together and they looked out their window and they saw their neighbor across from them, an older lady, was hanging out her laundry. And they noticed that the laundry was dirty. And it was weird. Why would she wash her laundry, hang it out and dirty? Why would she do that? And every day it's repeated. For every breakfast, they looked out at 8:30 in the morning. They looked out, the same thing repeated itself. Every morning, she hung out her wet laundry and it was filthy. They said, "Oy vey nebuch, this lady can't afford detergent." They said, they were like all proud of themselves. You know what? We have some wedding money. We're going to use our Meister money. We're going to buy her a lifetime supply of Tide and bleach. And we're really going to do good for this lady. So they were very excited. They went to the store. They bought it. They went to the apartment. They figured out which apartment it was, the opposite building. They knock on her door, said, "Hi, we're your neighbors across. We just wanted to give you a present." And they give her this huge box of Tide and bleach. And the lady looks at them like they're crazy. Huh? Like, what? Why? What? What? Why? And she showed them, "Look, do you see how much Tide I have? Do you see how much bleach I have? Like, what are you giving me Tide and bleach for? Why do you think I need it?" They didn't want to say, "Well, lady, you have dirty laundry." They didn't say anything. They said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, okay, whatever." And they like left, like all embarrassed. And they went back to the breakfast table. And then she is hanging up dirty laundry again. And this kept going on. The weather changed and it was starting to get that hot in their breakfast room. They open up the window and there she is again, washed dirty laundry, putting out dirty laundry. except that moment, they know that the laundry was clean. What happened was when they opened the window, the laundry changed from being dirty to being clean, because what was really dirty was their window. Their window was filthy. So they saw all this dirty laundry, but really the laundry was always clean because she had Tide and bleach, and it was their window that was dirty. And whether it's a true story or not, I don't know, but for sure the message is unbelievable, which is we're looking at people, we're looking at scenarios, we're looking at scenes, and they look a certain way and we're convinced we're seeing them the right way. But either our eyes are dirty, or we're blinded by a certain thing, we're not seeing it accurately. And even though we're convinced we are, as these people were, they were convinced they saw it accurately. In truth is, they weren't. And so many times we look at the Meron, we don't know, our eyes are tainted. We don't really understand it. We won't understand it. We look at other people, we judge other people. That guy, I can't believe what that guy's doing. Your eyes are dirty, your eyes are tainted, your eyes are black. You cannot go ahead and judge other people. That would be at kind of the end of Meron. Just a quick bar in the Parsha, Parsha's Bahar. It says that we are at the end of the Parsha, it says, Kili Avadim. We are Avadim to Hashem. We're not Avadim to anybody else, which is why a worker can stop working in the middle of a job. He can quit. He won't get paid, but he's not a slave. And I heard that whenever you're working, whenever you're doing something, you have to realize you're not a slave to your job. You're not a slave to your boss. We're always Avadim to Hashem. There's a medrash that says a shoemaker, every time he would stitch, he would say to himself, I'm not a shoemaker. I'm not a shoemaker. You have to know who you are. You're not Bob the builder. You're Bob the Eved Hashem. Now, you may also be a builder. That can be fine, but that's not who you are. That's not your essence. And so remember, we're always Avadim to Hashem. Parsha b'chukosai, the klalas came because we were not amal b'torah. We didn't do the mitzvahs. The tranquility we have in this world is to give us the ability to do Torah mitzvahs. If we're not going to use that ability, Hashem takes away the tranquility. And therefore, that's b'chukosai te'lechu. Go in your ways, do Torah mitzvahs. Then you're going to have good as an opportunity to do more Torah mitzvahs. If you're not going to take advantage, Hashem will take that away. Have a good Shabbos. I'm Hashem next week. Shavuos.